Hi, and welcome back to Part 2 of Unit 11, Health IT in the Future. This is part of Component 7, Working with HIT Systems. I did go out and look for other ideas, and for those whose images were labeled for reuse or were publicly available web pages, I cut and pasted the images here. The iPhone reflecting into the hand is a particularly interesting concept, which made me think about mobile clinicians and the way that an EHR can travel with them. The issue with looking at a smartphone for an EHR, which is something that is already possible, the issue is real estate. It's way too small to get a good view of what you need to make a high-quality decision. Anywhere, anytime projection is a really interesting idea. As I discussed earlier, however, we need to have a fair appraisal of the cons. So if you display a patient's chart on your hand, or maybe you decide to project it onto a wall since it's bigger, what about privacy safeguards? Now, in the middle of this collage of images here, you're going to see a picture of a device called LookTel. This was supported with federal grants from the National Eye Institute, and this device was built to combine, quote, the power of a smartphone with advanced artificial vision software to create a helpful electronic assistant for anyone who is visually impaired or blind. You can use LookTel to automatically scan and recognize objects such as money, packaged goods, CDs, DVDs, medication bottles, as well as landmarks, end quote. That can be found on the LookTel site, which is cited there on the slide. If you have internet access, you can actually click on the image there of LookTel and watch a short YouTube video. The URL is also reflected on the bottom of the screen in case you would like to watch the video online at another time. Again, consider the impact that this device turned towards health could do. Read medicine bottles. Turn a product label into an audio so a person could determine the salt content of a foodstuff. Or it could distinguish between a can of cat food and a can of tuna. Just more fodder for your creative consideration. The massive growth in digital connectivity, particularly in the baby boomer population, also seems like an area of tremendous growth for innovative HIT. I encourage all of you to visit the web page at the top in the blue, and there are scores more like them. I found the title, Disruptive Demographics, and its relationship to an aging global society to be intriguing. Chronic disease, most common in aging persons, really requires new ways to engage patients and help them better manage their disease. This can help keep them at home longer and out of expensive acute care services. This website also does a terrific job of debunking the myth that older folks are not embracing technology. Look and think about how you can contribute your creativity to HIT application and innovation for older Americans. The final objective for this unit is to hypothesize how HIT may intersect with publicly available data to improve health, such as point of sale data, weather data, geographic information system data, foods, etc. I suspect that many of you have heard of the term biosurveillance, and I would also venture to guess that many of us became familiar with this term in relation to the fear of terrorist attacks. There are many different dimensions, however, and while my goal is not to do a deep dive here, I do think it is beneficial for you to think about HIT in the future as related to analysis of gigantic sets of available data. Of course, most in healthcare are busily trying to get at the data that's generated as a natural product of healthcare services, such as particularly in relation to obtaining the data necessary to achieve our quality measures benchmarks. However, there are valuable indicators that are hiding in plain sight, such as purchasing patterns in a Walmart. When sales of cough medicine or Imodium go through the roof, chances are you have an illness running across your community. When school absenteeism skyrockets, it's a pretty good indicator of some sort of community illness. While the health departments do track data and report the number of cases, for example, the flu, chances are that by the time the data is released, it's either a statement of the obvious or the disease surge has already passed. The point that Dr. Eisenbach makes, he's cited here on the slide, is that there's a lot of data out there untapped that can be used to help us with public health and ultimately personal health. He coined the term infodemiology. And the whole concept of studying what populations search upon to predict health needs, I think, is pretty clever and is being utilized today. Dr. Eisenbach's rationale for investigating this area is summed up in this quote: "The internet has made measurable what was previously immeasurable. The distribution of health information in a population, tracking in real time health information trends over time, and identifying gaps between information supply and demand." How is infodemiology defined? Well, according to Eisenbach, it is the science of distribution and determinants of information in an electronic medium, specifically the internet, or in a population, with the ultimate aim to inform public health and health policy. That quote comes from the URL, which is on the slide, which was active as of October 2010.
Let's see infodemiology in action. Google Flu Trends is a really interesting example, and I'm reading to you a paragraph from this site that explains how it works. So, I quote, "Each week, millions of users around the world search for health information online. As you might expect, there are more flu-related searches during flu season, more allergy-related searches during allergy season, and more sunburn-related searches during the summer. You can explore all of these phenomena using Google Insights for search. But can search query trends provide the basis for an accurate, reliable model of real-world phenomena? We have found that a close relationship between how many people search for flu-related topics and how many people actually have flu symptoms. Of course, not every person who searches for flu is actually sick, but a pattern emerges when all of the flu-related search queries are added together. We compared our query counts with traditional flu surveillance systems and found that many search queries tend to be popular exactly when flu season is happening. By counting how often we see these search queries, we can estimate how much flu is circulating in different countries and regions around the world. Our results have been published in the journal Nature." End quote. So if you go to this site, you will see that exact paragraph, and I'm going to encourage you to go to that site because you will see that little graph that is on the slide here will actually run in real time for you and show you exactly how well that infodemiology, or tracking search patterns, actually predicted data that was coming out of the CDC. It's really quite interesting. The takeaway point here is that as more and more data becomes available, there are huge needs for and value in pattern detection work. What sorts of health behaviors cluster together? Is there a link that may not be as obvious that we can explore to improve health delivery? So let me give you an example, and it has absolutely nothing to do with healthcare, but it does illustrate the concept. You've probably heard the word data mining, etc., and in essence, this is really what it is. But I'm going to refer to my example as one of those classic market basket analyses. So I just want you to listen to the story and think about how this could be applied in regards to health. Even though it's called market basket analysis, I want you to think about health, not selling shoes. Market basket analysis is really just another way to refer to what people buy and the patterns that may exist between buying one product and buying another product. An example may be in a convenience store, and maybe they want to study what customers are buying so they can arrange products that are more likely to be bought if they are in close proximity to one another. Have you been into the grocery store and seen the placement of tomatoes, basil, and mozzarella cheese all together? Coincidence? I think not. Think about those candy displays in the grocery market. Is it a coincidence that they are loaded right at eye level for the child in the shopping cart, while the parent is maximally stressed unloading groceries, looking for keys, trying to find the credit card, etc.? Have you ever thought about why all those junky sweetened cereals are located where they are on the shelves in the stores? They are certainly not located at the top of the shelves. They are placed right at kid eye level. It's about product placement to maximize sales. Anyway, back to the market basket analysis. Convenience stores wanted to see what people bought together. They studied the results of months of sales data from their barcode scanning database. So many things that clustered were obvious. People would buy bread and milk. People would buy soda and a hot dog, or soda and a sandwich, or a hot dog and chips, or whatever. That's pretty obvious, understandable. But then they chanced upon another interesting find, which was the clustering of the purchase of beer with diapers. And this was quite unexpected. I mean, I don't know necessarily that would have been something that I would have a priori hypothesized, but anyway, they found upon conducting focus groups that the reason that these two elements clustered together in buying patterns was that mom had sent dad to the store to get diapers for Junior, and dad could not pass by the beer display without picking some up. Maybe you're smiling right now and trying to figure out where I'm going with this and how it relates. Think about this from a business perspective. If you have diapers on sale and you find a strong relationship between the purchase of diapers and, more conventionally, let's say baby food, and then you place them together in the display, but you don't put them both on sale at the same time. Got it? So in regards to health, could we turn this around and say what tests cluster that may just be an ordering habit and not evidence-based? What health services do patients use or inquire about when they're visiting a health facility for something else? What sort of trade-offs are better for a diabetic who is craving a sweet? I think that if you put your mind to it, you may think of a creative way to think about infodemiology, HIT, and better health and better health care.
To finish out this unit, we can look back at the objectives and think about the journey that you've just been on. We've addressed the impact of reforming our healthcare system and how HIT could be utilized. And I hope I gave you enough fodder for thinking about the future of HIT. Yes, some of the ideas presented may be sort of way out there, and maybe by the time you're watching this slide deck, it will be old hat. But no worries, this is just a mind expansion exercise and is really only constrained by your level of creativity and out-of-the-box thinking. We talked briefly about alternative designs, and we explored a bit in regards to using digital data from many different sources, both inside and outside of healthcare, to improve health. We hope you've enjoyed this unit, and we're looking forward to the future to see the emergence of new HIT to help us on our journey to better, safer, and more effective health. I leave you with this quote. When it comes to the future, there are three kinds of people: those who let it happen, those who make it happen, and those who wondered what happened. And I certainly hope that you will be the make it happen kind. Thanks. Have a great day. And this completes Unit 11.